Rich Kimble, Kerry Haskell. Time to talk a little Boston sports. To do that, we turn to our friend Nick Coit of ABC6 in Providence. Hello there, Nick.
Hello there, Rich. What's going on?
A whole lot. A pretty busy day here for a world that doesn't technically have much going on in the sports world. But let's start with the Patriots. And what are we up to now? Six opt-outs and some pretty big names.
Six opt-outs. Yep. And four big names today, four familiar names. And I appreciate you and Kerry for pushing me back here because I was supposed to be on earlier in the show, but they put me on the 4 o'clock news because these names were so big that we're opting out of the Patriots season. Today it was Dante Hightower, Marcus Cannon, Brandon Bolden, and Patrick Chung all opting out. Between them, I believe it's 11 Super Bowl rings. So that's some familiar faces and reliable players.
Well, and they're obviously not going to be the last, whether it's for the Patriots or other teams. And so can this work? Can any of these sports that aren't in a bubble actually make this a reality?
It's a great question, Rich. And I think the last 24 to 36 hours, it's been a real reminder of just how quickly this can get out of control with the Miami Marlins situation. And, you know, I think of baseball and I say, well, okay, you know, you can try to do that outside a bubble. I don't totally, you know, mind it as long as you try to be careful, all that stuff. But even then, you know, you expose yourself to the outside world and then you see what happens with the Marlins. And, you know, now they're shut down through at least Sunday. So it's a really slippery slope. And here's the thing with the NFL. It's a high contact sport.
Yeah.
If you're not in a bubble, this could really, I don't know how it's going to work, Rich. I hate to be pessimistic about it. I want football. I love football. But in this situation, I don't know, man. I don't know how it's going to work.
No, I don't either. And I don't see too many scenarios where you could get all of those teams and all of those players into a bubble, although some have suggested our numbers are really low in Maine. Let's put them out in the woods of Maine. We'll build. They got money. They can build some fields. They could play here. There won't be any fans anyway. But realistically, yeah, anytime you're traveling, and we see it in all these cases, because it only takes one guy deciding he's going off to get, you know, strip club wings, or sees a girl that he wants to say hello to, or as we're getting now reports of Major League Baseball that in a couple of the hotels there have been weddings going on and people everywhere. This cross-pollination of COVID-19 is pretty impossible to stop once you leave the field.
Yeah, you're right. And again, with baseball, I thought, okay, maybe because of the natural distance between players and on the field, but even then, you're right. You just don't know where you're going to be exposed, and once you are, and especially too, with some of these test results, they're coming back, you know, 2 days later. I was even shaking my head last week when you found out about Juan Soto and the Nationals, and I'm thinking, boy, his test result comes in and just before the opener against the Yankees, and he was tested 2 days before and played in an exhibition and was in a practice with his teammates. So you're thinking, what happened during those 48 hours?
Mm.
Did it spread? And that's the dangerous part of this. And lucky for MLB and even probably lucky for, you know, Philadelphia, the Phillies had no players testing positive today, at least so far, which is good. You know, the only guy that tested positive within the organization was the visiting clubhouse attendant who was around the Marlins. So, but you know, if you don't catch that, maybe he interacts with the Phillies players, and then it goes there, and it just makes your head spin thinking about it. But you're right. If you're not in a bubble, it seems much more difficult to make this work. And again, with baseball, maybe, but football, we're talking about high contact, blood, sweat, and tears all over each other. I don't know how they're going to be able to get through a full season.
We're talking with Nick Coit here on Downtown. Well, if baseball season continues, that may be a mixed blessing for Red Sox fans because this group is awful. I mean, yes, the pitching, but I don't know. Maybe it's that there are no fans there. They've just looked so flat to me other than that Friday night opener.
Doesn't it seem like it was like weeks ago, too, that Friday opener?
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
it's
unbelievable. Somebody joked that, you know, you're pumping in the fake crowd noise, but Fenway obviously didn't install the boo button, because if Fenway fans had been there the last three nights, they would have heard some boos. They absolutely, this pitching staff, it's the first time in my life that I'll look at the pitching staff, or I'll look who the starters are, and I'll say, I don't know who that is. Who is that? Who's pitching? And the whole, I'm old school baseball, I think, Rich. The opener thing, unless you have guys that are really good, like really good, I just don't see how it works. And you saw it last night. Like, your two guys that started the game, you know, Osich and Springs, they give up seven runs, and then the guy that probably should have started, Godley, was actually pretty good for his four innings. So you can't overthink it when you have a pitching staff like this, and they're talking about, like, lefty matchups and whatnot. With a pitching staff like this, Rich, I'm not talking about matchups and numbers and geek squad stuff. I'm talking about who can go out there and get out and throw strikes. Like, that's the first hurdle here for this pitching staff. So I overreact. I tend to with baseball. But at the same time, I just shake my head, because the last three nights have just been ugly for the Red Sox.
Well, and how did they get here? And I understand they cut payroll, but they're still among the highest in the game. Is it on Chaim Bloom for taking a chance on all these rejects? Can we still blame Dave Dombrowski? But how does a team that's spending this much money have a pitching staff of not even 4A guys?
I even go back to the Charrington days, because back then you're even spending money on players and spending money in places that just didn't come to fruition for you. And that's my biggest criticism of the Mookie Betts deal and not keeping Mookie Betts here, is because I'm one of those that I don't want to sign up any player in any sport to a 12-year contract. It's just a lot changes in 12 years. But if there ever was a place to spend a lot of money, it would be on a homegrown franchise MVP player. And the reason the Red Sox couldn't do it, Rich, is because in the Charrington days, they threw $72 million at Paw Sox legend Ruznay Castillo. Yeah. They threw a bunch of money at Pablo Sandoval, who, if you've seen him these days, oh boy. They threw all this money to all these different places, and they've made all these decisions that this is how they're being run now. And I think I don't put a lot of criticism on Bloom maybe quite yet, because I think this is what they brought him in to do, Rich.
I think so, too.
To run the Red Sox like a small market team so that they can get their payroll back to a reasonable level, which, again, you're talking about a big market team, and we're talking about reasonable payroll. That's another criticism in itself, because they've thrown money in all these different places. So I don't put too much on them. I put it more on just the decision-making over the last decade and the direction of the franchise. It's just been so up and down. And I know you won two World Series, but, you know, consistent winning hasn't been there. You've been way up and way down.
I think you're absolutely right. I think Bloom's charge for this season, and maybe next season as well, is bring in a bunch of these cast-offs, much like Tampa Bay did, and hope you can catch lightning in a bottle with one or two of them.
Yeah, and I think that it's going to continue all throughout this shortened season. I think they're going to try to find guys who they feel like, okay, maybe we've found something here, maybe we can go forward with them, whatnot, and come back next year with, you know, at some point, Chris Sale, and revamp the pitching staff the way that you'd like to, so that they can start doing matchups and openers and getting creative. Because right now, again, I shake my head at it, because I'm like, you can't go with openers and whatnot when you have this pitching staff. And it's funny, people compare this starting rotation, quote-unquote, which I wouldn't even call it a full rotation right now, because you have three guys that have ever started. they compare it to 1997, and that 1997 staff, I thought, was way better. It was Tim Wakefield, Jeff Suppan, Aaron Seeley. Like, at least there were guys there that had won at the major league level. You've got, on this staff, you got Evaldi, Perez, and then, okay, Ryan Weber started some games, but not done much in the big leagues. So, and after that, you just don't know. It just makes you shake your head.
A lot of that going on these days, for sure. Hey, Nick, we appreciate it. As always, thanks for making time for us this afternoon, and we'll look forward to catching up with you again very soon.
Always a pleasure, Rich. Thanks.
Thank you, Nick. Nick Coyd, ABC6 in Providence.